Obviously, a huge week in St. Louis. NASCAR coming to town for the first time. Been a long time coming. And it's not just Curtis Francois, who is the current owner at Worldwide Technology Raceway, but years before that, the drivers who were from St. Louis did their time at the dirt tracks and wanted to make it on the good old boys circuit, whether it was Rusty Wallace or Kenny Schrader. I'm sure these guys were always talking about, would St. Louis ever have a stop? And here it is, 2022. It's going to happen. Hosting the Enjoy Illinois 300. It's this Sunday. And if you're going to talk about racing in St. Louis, one name is sort of at the top of that list. And that's Rusty Wallace. When you win a cup championship, it elevates you to a different level. And that's what happened to the pride of Arnold. Rusty Wallace did that in 1989. And it was fun to sort of talk about how he became the Miller guy. Miller Lite for many years. Before that, I think it was MGD. Miller Genuine Draft. Boy, that's going back in time, right? MGD, MGD Lite. But a St. Louis guy getting affiliated with Miller, and we asked Kenny about that, and I'm sure he would have loved to have been a Budweiser guy, but when he was starting to make his name, looking for help, Miller jumped to the front of the pack, and Rusty is going to be in town this weekend, part of the radio broadcast, the MRN, the, what is it, Motor Radio Network, I should probably know what that is, Motor Sports Radio Network, something along, it's the MRN, people that know, know. But Rusty, a lot of good talk about rivalry with Dale Earnhardt Sr. and how they were not bitter enemies on the track, but were friends off the track. Certainly rivals for sure. NASCAR's changed quite a bit over the years. But a great St. Louis success story and fun to catch up with him, talk about this weekend, look back on his career, some of the big moments, some of the scary moments. Rusty Wallace is the Kilcoin Conversation, presented as always by B&G Tuck Pointing, the best in the bricks. That means if you need tuck pointing done, waterproofing, foundation repair, make sure you call the folks at B&G Tuck Pointing. There's a great example every time they tweet, or if you go to their website, bgtuckpointing.com, of the work they're doing. The before, the after shots are impressive. Get a free estimate at 363-0525. Ask for Rich Galati by name. Great sponsor of the Kilcoin Conversation. Make sure you're checking in with him when it comes to waterproofing, foundation repair, and of course, tuck pointing. BGTuckPointing.com. Triad Bank, St. Louis based since 2005. When I say the neighborhood friendly bank, what does that mean? Well, I don't know. How often do you go into your bank and you just don't feel like they're very friendly? And it's in your neighborhood, but they're not very friendly. Triad Bank wants to do business with you. And if you're a business owner, even better, because they know the St. Louis market. They're all from here. They can get those decisions made here in town. So commercial loans, home loans, car loans. Check out my friends at Triad Bank on the web at triadbanking.com or in person. Clayton Road in Frontenac, the great folks at Triad Bank. Also, Appliance Discounters, theappliancediscounters.com. You know, when it all started, it was sort of the dinged and dented models, and they had great deals. And now, they still have great deals, but they have every type of appliance out there, every brand you've ever heard of. We're starting the process now of doing a remodel in our kitchen. And we talked to John Bradley and his group over there at Appliance Discounters. Whatever name brand you're looking for, they have it. It's unbelievable the access they have. Supply chain, not an issue for them. Make sure you stop by and see them and check out the great General Electric merchandise, GE rebates on top of the already low prices, washer, dryer, stove, refrigerator, you name it, they've got it. TheAppliancediscounters.com. Cannot recommend them highly enough. Their savings are your savings. And also Marie de Villa Senior Living for, what, 60-plus years? Because it started in 1960 at the corner of Weidman and Clayton Road. Great spot for your senior years. Beautiful campus out there. I always mentioned that Red Shandian's, you know, he was like a business investor, and then he's like, I'm going to live there. And he lived there for many, many years. Villa Estates, assisted living, whatever type of program you're looking for, they have it. Easiest thing to do is to take a virtual tour, whether it's for your mom and dad, aunt and uncle, maybe it's for yourself down the road. Check out what they're all about at mariedevilla.com. All right, let's do it. Rusty Wallace, the Kilcoyne Conversation. This is part of our programming on KTRS Radio, so you might hear, you will hear, Brendan Weesey, sports director at KTRS, conducting the interview along with myself as we get super psyched for the NASCAR race, first time ever in St. Louis.
Number one, they got the race, and we're excited about that. Yeah. Number two, probably the most important thing is that it kicks off right. I mean, when I mean kick off right, I mean, man, everything's got to go good for the fans. We got to be able to get in and out of the racetrack good because it's going to be a sellout crowd. Hope everybody has just a great experience of getting in the track and getting out of the track, because I've seen a couple inaugural races have issues. The one I think about mostly was the inaugural race at Kentucky when it happened. People were sitting on the highway, 2 hours after the race even started, and never could get inside the racetrack because the crowds were so big. But from what I hear, I've been talking to my brother Kenny a lot, and with the state of Illinois helping the track so much with an extra lane and all the things they're doing, I don't think anybody's going to have a problem getting in the track or out. But I know management over there knows what I'm talking about, and they're not going to let that happen. So, you know, just making sure that thing kicks off good, and then, gosh, I hope we have good weather and all that, you know.
And, Rusty, is it sort of the perfect storm where NASCAR kind of was getting away from the super speedways, 100,000 people, and you got this track in Illinois, St. Louis market, untapped, not as big as those monster tracks, and that's sort of where NASCAR is shifting back to, and then you had an owner in Curtis Francois who's making all these improvements. Does it look to you like the perfect storm in terms of what NASCAR was looking for at this time? Maybe 20 years ago it's not a fit.
I think so. I think something new, and St. Louis is definitely a new racetrack. For the Cup Series, they got the brand new car that'll be debuting on this brand new racetrack. Nobody's ever seen that before. And you got a market that's really big, like St. Louis is. And it's a big sports town, especially with the St. Louis Cardinals there, which we love so much. My wife and I watch almost every single night when they're playing. And the whole deal. So, yeah, this is perfect for NASCAR. This is perfect for St. Louis. Now let's just do everything perfect and put a big smile on everybody's face when they leave.
So you're probably excited when you hear the news, but any part of Rusty Wallace who says, man, I wanted to race in my hometown. All those years I was doing it, I mean, you probably would have loved that opportunity.
I would have. I would have loved that, you know. And doggone it, I wanted to have big races in St. Louis. It never did happen. And for me to get into Cup Series, I had to move out of St. Louis. I had to move down to Charlotte, North Carolina to get myself right in the middle of it. And it worked out perfect for me, you know, with driving for Gatorade originally and then going with the Blue Max team where I won my title, then hooking up with Roger Penske for the remainder of my career and winning another 38 races, I think it was, and then getting the Hall of Fame and all the stuff, good things that happened to me. But, you know, now, but St. Louis never was a racing town. It just, you know, had racers from it, Kenny Schrader, myself, my brother Kenny, my brother Mike, to name a few. But now it's got a big badge on it. It is a Cup race. It's a NASCAR Cup Series racetrack in St. Louis, and something that's long overdue, in my opinion.
And what do you tell folks who've never been? I'm sure a lot of folks will come from around the country that want to go. Some maybe have from St. Louis have been to other markets. But how about somebody that's going for the first time? What is that NASCAR experience like?
Well, what they're going to see is an incredible race, because I know that racetrack pretty doggone good. And it's since I raced there one time, it's been completely repaved, and it's got tight turns 1 and 2 and a much bigger turn 3 and 4. These cars are going to be downshifting, going into corners, upshifting, exiting the corners. There's going to be probably a lot of body contact. I think it's going to be a physical race, because it's considered a short track, in my opinion. Even though it's a mile in length, it's still, you know, tight quarters. And there's going to be a lot of beating and banging. There's going to be some ruffled feathers amongst the drivers. I think it's going to be a physical race, one that you're going to be going, wow, holy smokes, I can't believe that just happened. There'll be a lot of the times during the race you'll be standing up instead of sitting down. I can guarantee you that.
Rusty, does that kind of setup also lead to a tight finish in the end?
Oh yes, it sure does. I think it's going to lead to a knockdown dragout. I think they'll come off of turn four side by side, going to the line. I really do, just because you know, the exit of turn four at the track there is so wide, you can get the side by side off that corner with a lot of speed and really create almost a drag race down to the start finish line. So, you know, knowing what I know about the track and the races I've seen there in the past, whether it's IndyCar or whatever, it always puts on a good race. So, I mean, if you're a first-time NASCAR person going to a NASCAR track, I think you're going to – I don't think. You picked a great race to go to for the first time because it's an inaugural event. It's going to have a ton of hype behind it, and I know it's going to create a good race.
Rusty, are there any of today's stars in NASCAR that remind you of yourself?
I think maybe the closest one I think about when I go back is probably Kevin Harvick. Harvick was is still currently really big time into setting his own cars up and having a lot to do with it. He owned his own race teams. You know, he's a pretty feisty guy behind the wheel. He likes everything right, you know, and it's a first-class dude. I think Harvick's probably, you know, if I got to sit back and think about it, probably one of the closest. I was going to say Carl Edwards, but Carl doesn't race with us any longer. He retired.
Right.
I think I got to take a look at Harvick, you know, because he's kind of a veteran now, not one of the young guys, but still gets it done on the racetrack.
I wonder if a Carl Edwards would sneak into town, maybe wear a fake mustache or something. Like, if this is in his backyard, that's one of the crazier things, and I've talked to Kenny about it. I said, we got to get him on a show or an interview. He just disappeared after being on top of the sports world. Do you think he might slide in there this weekend, or do you think he'll ever reappear in any format?
I think, man, this is just me thinking, I think we're going to see him back in a race car one of these days. I just can't imagine he won't. You know, he's still way too young to call it quits. He's in perfect shape from what I hear. He's a great race car driver. We know that. But, you know, he just said he was tired of it. You know, had more other opportunities he could take advantage of and wanted to spend more time with his family, which I understand. And so I guess that's the reason he stepped out of the car. But, you know, you keep hearing these rumors of late that, hey, he might be coming back. So who knows? I wouldn't doubt it. Wouldn't be surprised either.
All right, so I've always wondered. Now, this is brand identity. When I still see the blue Miller Lite 2 car, I still think of Rusty Wallace. I know there were some Miller Genuine draft years. God bless Brad Keselowski. I still think Rusty Wallace. It's amazing how much that brand and that identity sticks. But I've wondered over the years, did your St. Louis buddies like, oh, my God, Rusty's in a Miller car, a Miller Lite. Now, back then, it was a bigger deal if you weren't drinking Bud or Busch around here. How about over the years, your St. Louis buddies, did they give you a hard time?
They never did. And I'm going to tell you a true story. The Budweiser guys are okay with this right now. Man, when I was a young punk in St. Louis trying to make it the sport, I used to camp out on the front door of Budweiser all the time trying to get a sponsorship. And they turned me down every single time. And that, but Miller called me up, and I won a championship, and it put me on the map in NASCAR. So I thank Miller for what they did. I look back at Budweiser, and I think you should have done this, but you didn't. But hey, I was really a nobody back then, so I understand why they would have turned me down. But when it was all said and done, you look in the rearview mirror, you know, the competition got a hold of me, and we won. It felt pretty damn good.
Oh yeah, and I'm telling you that, like, I still think of the Tide car and Jeff Gordon. I mean, these. It's amazing what the sponsor gets. I know you guys are great about always rattling off the sponsor names, but I think it works in terms of getting in people's brains.
Well, I think it does too. I mean, you mentioned the Blue Deuce. I just mentioned it. The Blue Deuce. That was the nickname that car got. Here comes Rusty driving the Blue Deuce. And so, you know, whether it was the black and yellow Miller Genuine draft car that really was probably my most famous car when I was driving for Team Penske. Or the blue and white Miller Lite car. I mean, people remember that maybe later in my career more than they did the Miller Genuine draft car. But, yeah, it's still sticks. And one of the reasons it sticks is that sponsor would be on the car all year long. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, the way the finances are in NASCAR, there's like four or five different sponsors on a car during the year. And so they really can't get any traction about, you know, they looked at the black number three, and they looked at the Miller Lite number two, and they looked at guys that had the same sponsor all year long. And I think it's a shame that we can't do that, but I understand that now because the finances the way they are, and now these teams have multiple sponsors, just like NASCAR. Instead of having one big sponsor for the series like it used to be Winston, now they got four different sponsors. So it's just the way it is.
And your dad, Russ, was a great dirt track racer. I'm sure the whole family would tag along. What age were you when you were with your dad at the track and you said, I want to do this. This is going to be me.
Man, I was like 15 years old. I remember I had to get a court order to get on the racetrack and back there at Lake Hill Speedway in Valley Park, Missouri. I was 15 years old. They took me to court, got the judge to sign off and give me a release that I could race at 15. And they let me drive, and there was two races that night. It was called a semi-feature event and then the big feature event. That's the one you want to be in. But whoever won the semi-feature event, I could qualify to get in a big race. I won the semi-feature event, my very first race ever. They put me in a big race, and I got so excited about it that I forgot to put gas in a doggone car, and I ran out of gas in the big race. Just something stupid, because I was so jacked up that I finally made it, you know. But, yeah, stuff like that.
Well, that's the number one, right? Make sure you got enough gas. That's how it starts.
Yeah, you better do that.
when did you know, hey, I'm going to stick and stay on the big circuit? Because it's one thing, obviously, by the time you win a championship, you're established. That puts you over the top. But when did you say, all right, I belong, or I'm not scraping for every nickel, or like I think I'm going to make it in this circuit?
Well, I didn't know I was going to make it until probably 1986, honestly. I made it to NASCAR in 1984. Was able to win the Rookie of the Year, driving with Gatorade. But I had a couple of rough years. I mean, I wrecked a lot of cars. I blew a lot of engines, so many so that you really couldn't get any traction. And I didn't know if I was going to be around. But then the Blue Max team called me up and they say, look, Tim Richmond is moving over to Team Hendrick. And we've been watching you, and we think you can get the job done. So they hired me. And my fourth race of the year, I went to Bristol and I won. Then two races later, I went to Martinsville, Virginia, and won again. And after I got that second victory in 86, that's the one that told me that, hey, I'm here. I finally made it in the club, so to speak. And that's when I started making some money and things started happening.
Russ, your first win comes at Bristol. What was your relationship like with that track and what it afforded you to do on the circuit?
I think that's a great question. A lot of people say, why did you just take the Bristol so quick? And I said, well, it's real close to a track we used to run up in Indiana in the American Speed Association, kind of the starter series before I got into Cup. And that was Winchester, Indiana. Well, I went to Winchester, and I won what they call the Dry Power 400. I remember that was the name of it. I won that 400, then I went back to Winchester, ran really good again. And when I got to Bristol, I said, man, this track's almost identical to Winchester. So I used some of the driving techniques I used at that track, and it worked at Bristol. And then as the years went on, I just kept tuning on it, working on my driving skills there. And I end up, when it was all said and done, I ended up winning 9 races at Bristol. My very first win and Cup came there, and then I had 9 of them. So it turned out that was a great track, and it's still one of my favorites.
And I wonder over the years, do you have a track that you just – it stymied you, or you just said, man, I don't know what it is about this place. I'm haunted by it. Or was there, like, so Bristol, is Bristol your all-time favorite, or is there a short list?
Well, it's one of them. You know, Bristol, I won there 9 times. I went to Richmond, Virginia, one of the greatest design tracks, I think, that NASCAR still runs on. And I won there 6 times. And then I went to Martinsville, the paperclip short, flat, half-mile track, and won there 7 times, I think it was. But as you can tell, a majority of my wins in NASCAR came on the short tracks. And so that was just really, really good for me. And I got labeled as the short track guy. Or in fact, when I was driving, they called me the short track king, but I don't want to go that far. But the short tracks were always great for me.
Any track that it just drove you crazy?
Yeah. Talladega, Alabama. I had some really, really bad accidents there. One of my very worst wrecks, 1993. You get some time, go back to YouTube, and YouTube Rusty Wallace's crash at Talladega, Alabama. You'll see me going down the front straightaway end over end 26 times at over 200 mile an hour. And I've had some massive crashes there, and it's one I never was able to get the luck I wanted to out of. But I have won there before. I won there in one of my own design cars when I used to live in St. Louis. We put a car together and took it there for what they call the Grand American 300, and I won the race at Talladega with all my St. Louis crew, or you know, helped me build the car and wrench it. And so, but that was my only victory I really had. Well, let me take it back. I had one more with the International Race of Champions, the IROC cars, used to call it. I won Talladega with that too. But And the other one maybe could be, always a tough one for me was Darlington, South Carolina, the Southern 500. I did finish second there one time, had some top fives, but a lot of the times I had some really struggles at that track. I never was able to really master it the way I wanted to, but everywhere else, man, I was pretty blessed. Everything else turned out pretty good for me.
Rusty, was it difficult to, when you had a wreck, the next time you got back out on the track, was it easy to put those type of incidents behind you, or did it, would it take some time?
Everywhere else, it was easy to put it behind me. But when I went back to Talladega, it was hard to put it behind me because I knew if that car got sideways again like it did at Talladega and the air caught it and got underneath the car, that car was coming off the ground. It was going to flip. So it happened to me at Daytona in 1993 in the Daytona 500, end over end, down to back straightaway, big flip. And then 4 or 5 races later, I go to Talladega, and it happens again. And so At that point, I started talking to NASCAR. I said, man, these cars right now, when they get air underneath them, they're taking off. So NASCAR did this big research and development program. They invented a thing called the roof flap, and the roof flap ended up keeping the cars on the ground. But I wasn't comfortable until they did something. And so when they did that, improved that, it fixed the problem, then I was okay then.
And, Rusty, when you walk away, is it hard to leave? How does a guy know when to leave? You know, and some guys stay in it forever. We mentioned Carl Edwards leaves when he's young. How do you know as a driver? Like in baseball, they kind of look at, oh, his swing is getting a little slow now. His fastball is no longer fast. How do you know as a driver?
Well, for number one, I started getting tired of being on the road all the time. I got tired of being away from home. I got tired of living in motorhomes. I got tired of living at, you know, at in hotels. I got tired of, you know, even though I had to do this for the sponsor, I got tired of being endless appearances for all the different sponsors. And it's something you had to do, you know. But I did it. And then finally, some of my performance started to wane just a little bit. I went through like a 75-race streak before I won again. And then I finally won my final race, my 55th race in 2004, of the same year that I announced my retirement from driving full time. But then you have really smart people like Roger Penske come up to me and say, you know what, you've won everything out there and I think it's time, and I support your decision. And so he was a big part of my decision of you know, retiring on top of my game, going out still winning and going out running up front. And the other one who was instrumental in that was the late Bill France Jr. I remember him saying, hey, look, man, you've done about everything. I don't need you getting hurt out here. You know, it's about time you hang it up. And they would just come straight out and say that, you know. And he told me, man, you're still running up front. You're still running good. I don't want to see you get hurt out here. He says, it's about time to hang it up, don't you think? He would say stuff like that. In fact, he was so supportive of it. When I announced I was going to do it, he said, I want you to do it here at Daytona. In the theater at Daytona USA, and his whole family was there, all the media, everybody. And I remember after it was all said and done, he took us over to his own personal home for a big dinner and a big get-together, and it was fantastic. But he was always super supportive of everything I did in the sport, and he was real supportive of me hanging it up when I did. And so was my wife, Patty, and so was Penske. And those three were the most important, and me feeling comfortable that I made the right call.
Rusty Wallace is our St. Louis legend, presented by Royal Banks of Missouri, on the call this weekend for the big race over in Illinois, the Enjoy Illinois 300 from Worldwide Technology Raceway on Sunday. And you can hear Rusty's call on MRN. Rusty, who would you say of your rivals, of your peers at the time, who did you have the most respect for? I imagine maybe there were maybe multiple drivers you had a good deal of respect for.
You know, one of the top guys on my list, it was Mark Martin. Mark and I grew up in the American Speed Association together. He won a ton of ASA races, I call it. I won a ton of ASA races. To this day, we still talk a lot on the telephone and text back and forth and stuff. The other definitely had to be Dale Earnhardt Sr. Yeah. I had a lot of run-ins with him on the racetrack, and you know, in the 90s, him and I were just, it seemed like we're always running first and second in all the races. And so I would say from 1988 to 88, right up to like 2000, it felt like I was racing him every race, side by side, beating and banging. So, but Mark Martin and him and I mentioned Mark first only because we grew up together on the short tracks, and I knew what he went through, and I know what I went through. And so I would say those two guys are the ones that stand out for me personally.
And people might be surprised. You and Dale Sr. were friends, right, after racing, because you certainly were rivals on the track, but eventually pretty close?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, off the racetrack, I like dealing with him a lot better off the track than I did on the track. I thought he was always trying to steal my money. But and I know he was, and I know that's the way it was. But off the track, we got along really, really good. We went on some vacations together. We did some things like that. The families did, and it was a really good relationship. I'll put it that way.
Are the rivalries as intense now? I mean, occasionally we'll see a fist fight. I mean, nothing like, didn't Cale Yarborough walk in the middle of the track to punch somebody? I mean, is it as intense? Is it as mean now as it was then?
It's just way different. The drivers are much, much younger. I mean, I got my first break in NASCAR when I was 26 years old. These guys are starting at 18 years old now. And when you see some guys get in a fight, or argument, right now, generally, it's not a major fist fight like it used to be back in the when you had Cale Yarborough and Buddy Baker and big men getting at it, you know. And those guys were, 45 to 50 years old doing that stuff, you know. Nowadays, they're in their 20s or even teens. But these guys are driving equally as hard right now as they were back then. I watch how hard they're driving these cars, and sometimes they're driving them past the limit like we saw in the Coca-Cola 600 the other night. And my gosh, they wrecked a lot of cars. It was exciting as hell, and they were up on the wheel. There's no doubt about that. But the controversy is still there. I will tell you that. That's for darn sure.
And that sells, too, doesn't it? I mean, NASCAR may be like, okay, we're going to discipline so-and-so, and we're mad at any time there's a scuffle or some bad blood late. And here's a question. When is it okay to bump the other car? Because, like, sometimes they bump him in the wall, and they say, oh, what a great move, now he's in first. Then they bump him and say, oh, that was a cheap move. Is there an unwritten rule when you can do it and when you can't?
You know, I would say there's not an unwritten rule, but I will tell you if it's, my rule is that, I mean, it's on the last lap. It's on the last lap at a place like a Bristol or a Richmond or a Martinsville or something like that. I'm not big at all on retaliating with somebody or going for somebody, putting a bumper on them at a place like Daytona or Talladega where you're going over 200 miles an hour, and if you crash wrong, it could really hurt you, you know. So I'm not big on the big speedways, trying those stunts, but, you know, I've had it done to me a couple times at Bristol, Tennessee on the last lap by Jeff Gordon. And after it happened to me, they start nicknaming it the bump and run. And it became acceptable, and to this day, it's acceptable and expected.
It's interesting because you're right. It almost sounds pleasant, like no big deal. Hey, it's a bump and run. When actually, the bump and run could actually do some serious damage.
Yeah, again, at the bigger racetracks, especially like I was talking, Talladega and Daytona, I mean, you're talking cars running over 200, maybe at speeds 215, 220 at Talladega, entering the corners, and you know, get a little too aggressive, and that could end a spell disaster for you. But hey, everybody knows that, and the drivers do too. It's just, you know, some are willing to, some drivers that maybe haven't ever had a win, and they see the win that close to them, they're just not going to give it up. They're going to go for it and hope for the best, you know.
Rusty Wallace, our guest, our St. Louis legend here on the Big 550 KTRS. Rusty, you look at your career and 55 wins. We talked about some of your success at the Bristol Motor Speedway, but are there elements of all your wins that you can recollect back and think about?
Oh, man, there's so many of them that I've won that I think about, you know, crazy ones too. I'll never forget a big win at Michigan I had. They just repaved the racetrack, and during the race their track started tearing up terrible, and it was rutting up real bad, and I have 12 laps to go, my car started running out of fuel. We had a miscalculation. Dale Earnhardt was running second. I'm straddling these tore up parts of the racetrack, Thing runs out of gas. I hit pit road real quick. And as soon as I hit pit road, a caution flag came out for some reason. They fueled me up. I went back out there, restarted 12th, and I passed the car every single lap. And coming off of turn four with the checkered flag waving, I passed Earnhardt and went on and won the race. And it was so dramatic, it was crazy, you know. And then I've had wins where I was so completely exhausted. One race at Richmond, Virginia, over 100 degrees that day. I'll never forget, I won the race, almost passed out in the car so much. I come down pit road after I won, and I drove right past Victory Lane and stopped in the middle of the track and got out of the car and slid down the car. And I said, man, I can't let that happen again. I got to keep myself hydrated more. But had some real tough ones. And then I just had some ones that I was really proud of, you know, like my very first win in 86 when I won Bristol. Then my last one at Martinsville when I won my 55th and final one, you know. And there's a bunch of them in between, but there's a couple of them like that that stand out.
You are very recognizable still. I mean, you look the same. I imagine when you go to a track, can you get through a crowd without everybody saying, oh, my God, it's Rusty Wallace? I mean, I know sometimes you want to just go to the Cracker Barrel with Kenny and have breakfast, but I bet it's hard for you to just blend in.
Well, it everywhere else is no problem, you know. I mean, when you get to a track with the track environment with all the race fans at the track, they all know you at the track. Everywhere else, not so much, you know, and so I can get around town pretty easy and get around different areas pretty good, but, you know, at the track it's tougher, but I love it. I always tell people, I said, the day they quit asking for an autograph or cheering for, you know, you've done something wrong, and I don't want to do nothing wrong, you know, so I want to keep my fans and make them happy, and so far so good.
So much fun to catch up with Rusty. Even after racing, he was on ESPN for a long time, a little bit of ABC, now on the radio. Very connected to the sport of NASCAR. I'm sure it's a great thrill for him for it to be in his hometown. And his brother Kenny, great promoter of all things racing. And really, Kenny's a great promoter of all things St. Louis. Mike Wallace had a great career as well at the NASCAR level. The Wallace brothers are synonymous with NASCAR, especially in our town of St. Louis. So appreciate Rusty hopping on the show, being part of the conversation. And it's a fun week in St. Louis. And I really enjoyed him explaining it to people who maybe have never been to a NASCAR race, what they can expect, what it's going to be like for them. Because a lot of folks might just check it out for the first time. And kudos to Curtis Francois, who's been on this program. He's the track owner. He's the guy who had the vision to make the track not only viable economically, but also sort of like a center for activity and to kind of add into the St. Louis sports landscape. That was the vision that Curtis Francois had for the track in Madison, Illinois. And they got a great view, man. They're looking right back at the skyline, city of St. Louis. I can go down to a serious rabbit hole here because I've told this to my friend. After a couple of Manhattans late at night, we start talking about where do you build, where do you, you know. I'm like, what if on the riverfront in Illinois you had this huge complex of high-rises or townhomes or whatever looking back at the St. Louis skyline, looking at the arch? All right, that's for another day. We'll talk about that down the road. But appreciate all of our sponsors, the Kilcoin Conversation. Thanks for checking us out at scoopswithdannymack.com. So much great content. If you're just listening to this, make sure you go to the website as well. Dan's got daily columns, articles by Bernie Miklas, regular commentary and interviews going on. There's a lot of content. High school pros, it's all at scoopswithdannymack.com. Appreciate Dan posting our material. You can always find us at Spotify and iTunes as well. The Kilcoin Conversation, presented by Triad Bank, St. Louis-based bank in Frontenac on Clayton Road. TriadBanking.com is their website. Appliance discounters. I mentioned all the great deals you can get on your brand new appliances. Also, service repair. Incredible team doing repair work. Instead of waiting 2 weeks, they'll come out there quickly and get your appliance back up and running. ThePplianceDiscounters.com. B&G Tuck Pointing. I know my guy Rich, a little bummed that the hockey season is over. Man, he loves Blues hockey. travels all over to watch those guys, but they continue to do great work. Summertime's a great time to make that chimney, garage, home. A lot of brick in St. Louis. You know the drill. When it needs tuck pointing, boy, it changes everything. It makes it look new again. BGTuckPointing.com or call them at 363-0525. 363-0525. Ask for Rich Galati by name. Also, Marie Davila Senior Living, corner of Clayton and Wideman Road. Great spot for your senior years and all types of options. The Villa Estates, where you're basically living on your own, but you can still pop over to the center, the hub of activity at Marie Davila, and have breakfast and lunch. You could be part of, on-site living there, assisted living. They have so many different layers of care. Make sure you check it out at mariedavila.com. I say that a lot, but I should probably spell it out. MARIDEVILLA.com. MarieDavila.com. All right, thanks for checking this out. Look forward to the NASCAR and all the racing this weekend. We'll talk to you again soon.